First, we began with working at pass violations. We didn't know how well this would work. We started in Kurdistan because we knew it would be fairly safe to operate there. And by that point, we'd moved our office there for security reasons because we don't use private security contractors. So we don't have armored cars or anything. So we used to drive around Baghdad in regular cars. And when it got sort of dicey, we moved to the north. In any case, so we started in Kurdistan. We found there was enormous interest, which shouldn't be surprising to those of you who know Iraq, because, in fact, the Kurdish national narrative, if we can say that, or at least the Kurdish identity narrative, is a narrative of persecution, and people are very interested in telling their stories. And if they were detained by the prior regime, as many, many people were, they are largely heroes in the current situation because they were the heroic Peshmerga that stood up to the repressive state. We started expanding. After we found that our methodology basically worked, we got lots of deep stories. And to give you one quick, our methodology basically involves asking people to tell their stories. There's more to it, but we don't come in with a survey instrument, for example, which is a particular, it's much more like journalism, except we haven't told too many people in the world about the project. but we will. Anyhow, we found that it worked, and so we then expanded to the center and the south of the country, and we found it worked there. In fact, we found something quite striking, which is that people all over the country weren't just approachable for their stories, were eager to tell their stories. Now, I'm not going to say every person wanted to tell their story. That would be somewhat ridiculous. But I can say we had absolutely no problem with finding people to tell strikingly personal stories about the most traumatic events in their lives when there appear to be, and this is really the question I wanted to raise here, you know, where there appear to be no evident benefit to the telling of their story. And by benefit, I mean there isn't a social science. There's a classic process of giving people stuff to participate. There are all these processes to give people stuff to do social programs, all sorts of ways you get people to do things. You might even argue in journalism you get potentially attention by being in the paper, good or bad, depending who you are. But what we found is across the country, and we find this all over the world in other similar kinds of projects, that people want to tell their story. And it raises a question that is not easy to answer, which is why. And similarly, we found people commonly saying they'd never told their story to anyone before this. And it raises the question, why? We were very explicit in our methodology to tell every person that we interviewed that there would be no express benefit from this. They wouldn't get anything other than that we would do our best to take their story seriously and report it as, you know, in some report, and we had some general ideas that we were collecting this for the benefit of the Iraqi society. So we found widespread interest, and we also found stories that were surprising. For example, you might think in Iraq, if you know the country, that particularly among the more conservative religious folks, but really anyone, that you would not get many women talking about their experience of having been raped. We have probably the largest rape database maybe in the world, or at least of these kind of projects. I don't know why, but many women who had nothing to gain from telling personal stories about what they'd suffered, including stories that devastated their lives in many, many ways that are individual in one sense, and yet by gathering so many, they're patterned and systematic. And these are open questions. I don't think I have a singular answer. Very briefly, I want to say as we were doing the current violations project, as you know, you heard from the other members of the panel, it was a little bit strange to talk about past violations in 2006 and 2007 with Iraqis at a time of unbelievable violence of a nature that has not been appropriately communicated, and I don't know the reason. This is another interesting question. Because as was mentioned, you know, you have a situation in Iraq where one out of every six Iraqis has been forced from their homes from violence. And when you hear about the success, and even the word was used, victory, during the presidential campaigns, it's a little bit hard to understand what the victory story is when 100 to 800,000 people have been killed, unknown numbers injured, one out of six people displaced, 5 million displaced people, about half refugees, about half IDPs. No indication that all of this is somehow resolving itself towards some end that is, I mean, how could that resolve it to some end that's a positive narrative? I suppose the cessation of violence is always a good thing, but at what cost? And I would say one of the interesting stories about all of this, because I know it's probably time to stop chatting about this, is I'll just leave with two things. One, we know that people need to tell their stories. We don't know why. And I don't mean that as a question with a simple answer. We don't know why. It's something very profound. Another question is, what is the truth of stories and testimonies? We particularly, and you wrestle with this every day, right? Because you have to deal with the truth of sources. One thing that's fascinating about gathering narratives, as testimony, is it speaks different kinds of truth. From the human rights community, it speaks a very rich truth because we get away from the classic case-based system of a court or of a traditional human rights report where you say, here is a case of torture, perpetrators, victims, date, place. We try to let people tell their story with all of the attendant complexities and interpretations. But then finally, I want to leave with one idea. We did this project to do documentation, to do fundamental truth-telling for the value of Iraqi society and the value of the world so that there exists a body of stories. And we have, you know, 1,929 stories of violations after 2003 that recount all of this stuff, from the position of Mahdi Army perpetrators, as well as victims of various, the multiplicity of armed groups. And secondarily, we did this project to engage in analysis. We've learned certain things about patterns of violations that, interestingly, journalists can't access. This is the social science benefit, because when you have thousands of something collected in a consistent way, you can say things that are play off of those many experiences. And finally, we have a policy component, which is there really something to learn for the world, for Iraq, about things that can be done in relationship to the suffering. But I want to leave with one thought that came up from the other presenters, which is spend a lot of time engaging with political violence and its traumatic impact. And as one thing is clear, at the end of the day, violence is productive. And I don't mean that violence is productive in a positive way. I mean that it's genuinely socially productive, and it only occurs in social environments in a way that's specific and particular to the context where that happens. The surging up of violence, not the surge that we hear about, this in Iraq was highly productive for the social conditions of that country. And there's an enormous amount we can learn from that that I'd be happy to talk about another time. But it is when we try to understand trauma, the violence that produces that trauma exists for real social reasons. It produces things socially. And it produces harm, among other things. But it also produces things. It produces things for all of the players, the perpetrators, the victims, the larger social context. And exploring that is I think, something that requires engaging with testimony and issues of truth. So thanks so much. Yeah.